Hi everyone, and welcome back to Travel Notes, a show where we use music as a medium to explore ways in which we're all connected. If you're listening in your car on the FM dial, thanks for tuning in to WOHM Radio 96.3 FM, Charleston, South Carolina's first and only nonprofit commercial-free radio station. And for everyone else who's tuning in via your favorite streaming platform, thanks so much for being here. You can learn more about what we do at Travel Notes through my website, gracemcnallymusic.com, under the Travel Notes tab, and on social media at travelnotes_podcast. So here on Travel Notes, we're big fans of pioneering artists who break new ground, and today's guest fits that bill perfectly. Today, we're talking with Gambian kora virtuoso Sona Jobarte. She's currently on tour and will be in Northampton, Massachusetts on April 9th and Kennett Square, Pennsylvania on April 11th, which happens to be a sold-out show. However, you can find out more about her complete list of upcoming performances on her website, sonajobarte.com. Sona is the first professional female kora virtuoso to come from the West African griot dynasties. Her lineage carries a formidable reputation for renowned kora masters. Most notable is her grandfather, Amadou Bansang Jobarte, and her cousin, the legendary Tumani Jobarte. Sona is respected for her skill as an instrumentalist, her distinctive voice, infectious melodies, and her grace on stage, and she's rapidly achieving international success as a top-class performer. In addition, Sona's dedication to spreading powerful humanitarian messages through her songs and her stage performances make her much more than just a regular musician. She's a compelling social activist, speaker, and changemaker who believes in leading by example. Her achievements as a global changemaker, which we'll talk more about in our conversation today, include founding the Gambian Academy and speaking to humanitarian issues at high-profile events around the world, including summits for the UN and the World Trade Organization. I'm so excited to welcome Sona to Travel Notes. To start, I have to ask, as the world's first virtuoso female kora player, what were some obstacles that you faced early on in your career, or perhaps still do?
For myself, growing up within this tradition, of course, it's been a challenge in terms of being female within this tradition, and in terms of that being accepted culturally, that has, of course, not been an easy journey. But mostly, one of the main ways that I have navigated that was to position myself on the stage rather than within the traditional cultural ceremonies that this music usually takes place in. So making myself an artist that really only appears on stage, in some sense, has given me a space of neutrality to pave the way for acceptance, because of the fact that that is a new space that's being carved out still now. So that's kind of I have my own ways of navigating those challenges and not bringing about too much resistance to what I'm doing by thinking carefully about where I position myself.
Incredible. That's really fascinating. Where does this music, traditionally the kora music, show up in traditional society?
It's totally intrinsically wrapped up in most of the sort of core life cycle ceremonies, so marriages, naming ceremonies, and any events that have social significance are still it's still essential to have music. And obviously nowadays, in more modern times, you know, political campaigns and rallies and so on, this is all harnessed because of the fact that this music and this tradition still has a lot of power within society and for people.
That actually brings me to a question I was going to ask. What role do you think the kora tradition has still in modern society, which you touched on a little bit, and then regionally, you know, and then maybe on the global stage?
Regionally, it still has a huge role in the sense of its legacy of having a very innate connection to, as I mentioned before, traditional events. However, what I'm trying to also rejuvenate and bring a lot more awareness to is the important role that it also has for young people and for people who have new things that they have to talk about, because society, of course, always changes and the issues of society continue to change. And I feel that it's very important that our traditions are able to also adapt to incorporate those challenges, and to be used as a vessel for be able to communicate that, rather than making people feel that they have to abandon their traditions in order to be relevant in the current day. And I think that's a pattern that we're seeing that is quite prevalent among the younger generation. And so what I'm doing is really trying to raise that sense of accountability for people to be inclusive and to be able to actually use music in constructive and critical ways within society, which actually has always been done, historically. But I think there has been an over-stagnation of some of these traditions, and partially has been because of the contact that these traditions have had with the rest of the world. Because once a tradition becomes celebrated globally for being a particular way, there is that encouragement and that sort of sense that everyone needs to keep producing the same stuff in order to be valued and recognized internationally, which is where a lot of the economic income comes from now. And so I think that's really one of the areas which, again, is quite critical that we are aware of, and can actually start to make movement to actually push back on that consciously.
Absolutely. What do you have any advice for other musicians who perhaps are starting out and facing similar obstacles that you did?
I find those questions so hard because they are incredibly general. And, having worked with so many young people, every single situation is so different. And I haven't found a miracle cure. I think it would be easy if we could, right? A lot of people just wouldn't go through the struggles if there was such a simple answer to it. And so I try to be very realistic in those situations, that every situation has its own challenges. And for us to really be able to advise people constructively, we must understand what those challenges are and what the unique paths that people can take, because they're not always the same. You know, my path would not and does not necessarily fit another person, right? And these, I'm talking about people even within the same tradition as myself. They have very different challenges. I've got young students, female students, for example, who want to pursue the traditional instruments that belong to this particular tradition, but maybe they don't come from a real family. And that navigation and that journey is very different to mine. So I think it's one that we do acknowledge the complexity of it. Not that I'm being discouraging, but I'm just trying to also be realistic that that there is, I think, a different strategy for every case, really.
So that's something that's interesting. And if you don't mind me asking, just because I know nothing about how it works in West African society, but if the griots, if someone doesn't come from a griot family, so are you saying that it would make it more difficult for them to then do? Yeah,
absolutely. I mean, I would even go so far as to say that I have witnessed that even for men coming up in the Gambia, one raised in the Gambia, but I'm not from a Creole family, who wanted to take in either playing instrument or in the case I've been exposed to constructing the instruments or having anything to do with the Creole tradition, there's actually far, I would say, more challenges, more obstacles that they face than a female being born into a Creole family. Again, that is a generalization, because obviously there will be females born in particular families that do make that very impossible. But I would say at a very generalized level, I'm seeing huge challenges for men coming from outside of griot families to be able to partake in that. I would say that the one thing that I have used as kind of a passport at times has been the very fact that I still come from this family line. So at the end of the day, despite being female, I'm still contributing to this tradition that people still hold very, very strongly.
Amazing. Yeah, no, that's fascinating. That is fascinating. And so let's talk about actually your work with the Gambian Academy. What inspired you to start the academy? And then what are some cultural challenges that you hope to address through your work with the academy?
So the reason that I opened the academy was really mainly to try to make a contribution to educational reform, which I feel is an essential part of the process of empowering and developing societies within Africa, not just within the Gambia, but continent-wide. So this is really for me about developing a blueprint, something that I can demonstrate its effectiveness over a particular span of time on a range of students. So this is really about curriculum development more than it is about the specifics of educating a certain number of students. And really, my goal ultimately is to have, I think, draw more and more accountability to people within the education sector in relation to the importance of education and making sure that that education is something which reflects their identity, reflects their culture, their traditions, their history, so that students are not having to be raised in an environment where they are almost having to adopt a foreign culture just to be educated. Mm-hmm. And that, of course, has an implicit effect on their mentality as they grow up and the paths that they choose to pursue and their success, especially within a continent, because I feel that we're not giving them the basic tools that they need to succeed within their own countries.
Exactly. That's really, if it feels like you're getting to the root, you know, and addressing it in a way that's holistic and sustainable. So let's switch gears and talk about your music. You're an excellent instrumentalist and you also have a beautiful voice. What are some messages that you hope to convey with your music?
Well, I think most of the messages that are current for me right now are on the album of Baninya Kumo. An album which, you know, kind of in many ways bridges the gap, I think, that I have been feeling and experiencing between what it is that I write as a musician and what it is that I do as an activist and an educator and contribute to society. So this album really is a statement in many ways about, I think, bringing a sense of action to music. So music is not just about, you know, talking about what you think, but it's also about reflecting what you are doing in whatever it is that you feel that you're contributing to. So that for me really is my most important message behind this album and what I'm performing currently. They're all on themes that I'm directly working on, working with, and contributing to in the Gambia and the wider community.
Mm-hmm. Amazing. And you write your own music. What does your writing process look like and what inspires you to write?
I'd say the process is, I often say that I start with a feeling. So I kind of often my process is just trying to figure out, what is the feeling that I want to convey through music and trying to find a way to express that sonically. But then also, obviously, every feeling comes from something related to this world and the existence of what we do within this world. And that sort of becomes the journey of creating a song and its message and everything around it. I guess that's sort of the overarching creation process.
Sure. Yeah. And what projects are you currently working on?
The Gambia Academy is taking up a lot of my time. I'm also obviously on the road pretty much full time because on average of a show every 3 days for every year that passes, which is incredibly intense. But also still having a lot of educational work that I do. We'll be starting my residency at Berkeley in Boston.
Oh, amazing.
There's a lot of stuff going on, a lot of moving parts. Yeah.
Sure. Congrats on that, though. That's going to be really awesome. How can people support the work that you do at the Gambia Academy?
In terms of supporting the academy, whilst there's obviously the usual means of financial support, which is very helpful because I do actually finance all of this myself. And it's been a very important process for me to do that because of the fact that I'm trying to do something different. And every time you try to do something different, it's often hard to kind of go down those mainstream routes of funding. And whilst I do now have a lot of support from, you know, key organizations like the UN and UNICEF and these organizations who are doing so much for development for young people in the Gambia and other countries, it is, something that I still find is very important for me to keep as something that I'm able to run independently because I'm actually trying to in many ways challenge the existing systems that are currently in place in the country. So so that carries its own challenges. But also, you know, a major thing that we've benefited from that I reach out to people to contribute is through their expertise, because this is an area that actually can stay with us, right? It's something that's quite sustainable when people are able to bring their unique expertise in the areas of academia or music or and so many different areas that we cover, or social development, or you know, women's empowerment. There's so many areas that we cover that that I encourage people to take part in terms of volunteering their expertise.
Amazing. Amazing. Well, Sona, thank you again for taking the time, and really, it's so amazing and inspiring to hear about the work that you're doing, and your music's beautiful. So, you know, I know it can't be easy, and it's probably, you know, challenging at times, but keep doing what you're doing, because it's really making a difference.
Thank you very much.
Yes, my pleasure.
Beautiful. You take care. All right. Okay. Thanks. Bye-bye.
Bye, Sona. So now that you guys are familiar with Sona and her work, I'm excited to share some of her music with you. These first two tracks are off of her 2022 album, which she mentioned earlier in our conversation. It's called Badinya Kumo, and this first one is called The Gambia, and the next one is Kambengwo, featuring Senegalese artist Youssou N'Dour.
Thank you.
track in today's episode is called Saya, and it's off of her 2011 album Fasiya, and was also featured on the score for the documentary Motherland, which is a powerful documentary on Africa fusing history, culture, politics, and contemporary issues. I hope you enjoy. For tuning in. I hope you enjoyed today's interview with Sona Jobarte. It was truly an honor to have her on the show and learn more about her music and the incredible work she's doing through her music. If you're just joining us and want to go back and listen from the beginning, or maybe you enjoy today's episode and want to check out more, you can do so on OHM Radio's website, ohmradio963.org, where you can find us under the Current Programs tab, or on my website, gracemcnallymusic.com, under Travel Notes. Huge thank you to OHM Radio for having Travel Notes on the air every Monday at 5 p.m. And until next time, wishing you peace, harmony, and safe travels wherever this crazy adventure of life takes you.